two leaders in cancer genomics next on Mendel's Pod. Welcome to the program. I'm Theral Timpson. We have a great show for you today. I'm joined by two organizations that have become leaders in our field of collaborating to make genomic insights for oncology more comprehensive, more efficient, and accessible. The Jackson Laboratory, or affectionately known among insiders as JAX, is an independent nonprofit biomedical research institution with a National Cancer Institute designated cancer center and nearly 3,000 employees in locations across the United States, Japan, and China. Its mission is to discover precise genomic solutions for disease and empower the global biomedical community in the shared quest to improve human health. Our second organization, Illumina, we all know who Illumina is. They're a global leader in DNA sequencing and other omics technologies, who is fueling advancements in life sciences, oncology, genetic disease, and other segments. Importantly, Illumina has been investing in complete workflows recently. For example, their new software, Connected Insights for Research Use, is for all steps of the workflow, including end-user variant interpretation. Illumina has been a leader dedicated to improving human health by unlocking the power of the genome. So, Dr. Kara Statz is here from the Jackson Laboratory, and also Dr. Erica Schnettler is in medical affairs at Illumina. Welcome to Mendel's Pod.
Thank you.
So, both of you have been keen to focus on oncology testing, and specifically how knowledge is managed and made accessible, say with Jackson's clinical knowledge base or the CKB, but also Illumina's recently released software for research purposes, which integrates this knowledge, which is called Connected Insights. I mentioned that. And so the integration of CKB and Connected Insights is what is connecting you here today and is really the theme of our program, excuse the double use of the word. So Kara, let's start with you. Please tell us about your background and work at JAX. Just get into the topic.
Sure. So I actually started at JAX about just over 9 years ago. So I'm a senior clinical analyst that works on the JAX clinical knowledge base, or CKB, as we like to refer to it as. And so my background actually, so I have my PhD in genetics and genomics from the University of Connecticut.
Okay. And Erica, same question. Tell us about your background at Illumina and what you're involved in.
Sure. Yeah. I'll just start by saying I'm from the lovely Twin Cities. I'm super excited about this topic today.
The lovely Twin Cities of
Minnesota.
Minnesota. Okay.
Minneapolis and St. Paul. Yeah. Yeah. I always say
St. Paul. That's what it is. Yes.
Yeah, Illumina being, you know, based in San Diego, but is a, you know, huge global company, but that's kind of where I'm based. And I started just quick background, started my sort of academic career, you know, studying cancer biology, the role of the tumor microenvironment. So just overall really excited about the discussion today and have a really great appreciation for the complexity surrounding, you know, cancer genomics and cancer biology. And then, you know, in terms of industry, I've been in the oncology diagnostic space for many years, primarily focused in field-based medical affairs. So I've really focused on the intersection of science and medicine and helping clinicians, especially oncologists, to kind of interpret complex, you know, molecular genomics results to, you know, better help their patients. So Illumina is full of a lot of brilliant people, engineers. I'm kind of more on the medical clinical side of the organization.
Okay. So let's drill down right away to that complexity that you mentioned. And this for both of you. I mean, how is cancer genomic data growing in complexity?
Yeah, I am happy to take a stab at this first. So just overall growing what I would consider exponentially, you know, year over year, I think we now have an appreciation that each, you know, unique cancer type, even down to the subtype, carries, you know, its own ecosystem of genomic complexity. And, you know, we've really moved sort of beyond an understanding of like single variant or single gene events like a BRAF V600E, mm-hmm. and really have to think of kind of the cancer genome as a whole now. So for example, things like complex genomic signatures like tumor mutation burden or TMB, microsatellite instability, MSI, homologous recombination repair deficiency, HRD, you know, these large scale chromosomal, you know, amplifications and deletions, rearrangements, fusions. It's just very much the alteration types are kind of growing in complexity. And not gonna go off on a huge tangent, but things like methylation and the methylome. So methylation patterns to like sort of help better classify subtypes. That's also sort of an added layer in all of this.
All of that is making a difference in medicine, right?
Right, right. Exactly. And I think, again, too, like all of this, you know, complexity of the cancer genome is very dynamic. So we know as patients get treated over time, they get radiation, they get chemotherapy, their tumors evolve, they change. So it's like kind of chasing moving targets in a way, all of these, you know, changes. And then another kind of point that I wanted to make too was, you know, thinking about specimen type. So, you know, we think of genomics doing these sort of assays on FFPE specimens, but just the field of liquid biopsy alone has like really expanded, you know, our understanding of biomarkers and how to use them in the clinic. And even within like liquid biopsy, you can take, you know, plasma or cerebral spinal fluid, urine specimens, all of these kind of, you know, have their own unique, you know, biomarkers that might be interpreted differently than if you were to see them in tissue, for example.
Wow. Okay. I did not know that.
Yeah. So just another kind of layer to this. Yeah. Like, especially in liquid, we can sometimes it can be easier to see things like resistance mutations, right? Cause you're not taking like a snapshot of the tumor. So that's kind of a really interesting area. And yeah, won't get into, I mean, today's focus really is on, you know, kind of somatic variants, I think, since we're talking about oncology, but, you know, distinguishing the cancer genome from like germline events or clonal hematopoiesis events is like a whole nother kind of topic.
So the point is there is a lot of complexity.
You just mentioned
an area which I had been considering before. So it's like every year there's new things we're looking at, you know, methylation came out. Yep. So Kara, let's put the complexity question to you, but let me just slightly change it. How are we doing with making complexity accessible and actionable? How are we doing with all that?
That's a really good question. Early on, as Erica mentioned, you know, the focus was those single genes, the ones that are really driving the cancer, those strong drivers. And, you know, you had one target, one drug. And so now with, you know, all the available testing, and we see several driver mutations within a patient sample, how do we look at that? And how does a clinician make decisions, I should say? So, I mean, currently there's, you know, large gene panels available for tumor profiling. In addition to that, you know, the advancement in technologies just in general, you can do whole genome now, you could do whole exome. So you're really getting a variety of alterations that are present within the tumor sample. And just to follow up with what Erica said, also looking at the tumor microenvironment. So in specifically looking at those immune cells, how is it playing a role in the complexity of that tumor type? Since these technologies have evolved and they're more cost-effective now, we're definitely seeing a demand, for samples coming through and being profiled. And then of course, you know, access to software that can be used for the analysis, because that's really where the bottleneck lies, is that tertiary analysis in terms of how do we interpret the variants that are in that sample.
Okay, so that's
so knowledge bases can help.
We're going to get into that now. So what you're saying, that's the bottleneck, but that's also the opportunity, right?
Correct.
For dealing with this complexity. Is that just so happens to come along in this, you know, the same history timeline as developing new powers with software. Now, the knowledge base, Eric, Kara, let's stay with you. At the heart of understanding complexity is knowledge, of course. So what is a knowledge base? What do you mean by a knowledge base?
So a knowledge base typically, in this case, can be, you know, basically a collection of organized data or content that allows users to ask questions and retrieve the answers to those questions. So in some ways, you can think of it in terms of how does the brain actually organize data? So similar to that. And knowledge bases can add a semantic model to it, or at least to the data itself. So you can classify the data, build relationships with the data elements, making it more flexible and adaptable, and then, you know, making it easily queryable. So can we query the data for, you know, to answer a specific question? Mm-hmm. So that's typically, or at least in the sense that in terms of the clinical knowledge base.
Right. And so you're distinguishing it from, say, just database. I mean, it's exactly. Mostly a database, but when you go from data to knowledge, that means you know something about it. Maybe there's some actionability there.
Exactly.
Right there, and that's where the querying comes in. So let's talk about your specific knowledge base, the CKB. What's included? What does that do for folks?
So CKB, it's a relational database. So it has several different elements to it, but it can be used to interpret complex cancer genomic profiles in the context of therapies and clinical trials, and of course, looking at the protein impact of the variant. So CKB includes genes, gene variants, clinical trials, drugs, and then what we call the bread and butter of CKB is the efficacy evidence. And what do I mean? So the efficacy evidence, basically what we do is we pull content from the literature. And so say you have a study for, you know, results from a phase two clinical trial, and it was biomarker specific. So we can make what we call a molecular profile, which includes one or more variants, connect it to a specific tumor type that was used in the study. What is the response to a therapy? And then we basically write an efficacy evidence annotation, which is a summary of the results of the study.
Cool.
So users can go in and find that information quickly by typing in, you know, if you search on a specific variant, you can get that information. So every, you know, this ranges from high level, so FDA drug approvals, to professional guidelines, NCCN, and then of course, you know, clinical trials that are published and even preclinical data, which can be very useful if you're doing research.
Okay, so this efficacy evidence is where it goes up and beyond, say, ClinVar or ClinGen.
Yes.
Okay, I mean, those are great databases with all the variants. But this is actually giving more evidence for the use of these and the use with therapies. And then the whole clinical trial aspect, I guess, helps people to know if there's a trial going on. Exactly. Maybe they want to join it.
Yep. So we curate targeted therapies or new investigational targeted therapies from clinicaltrials.gov and also immunotherapies. Those are very big right now. And so what we do is we import, you know, data from clinicaltrials.gov, and then we'll go and manually curate additional content. So what are the variant requirements for that trial? And then again, as you mentioned, somebody can go in, look at specific variants and see, okay, what are the therapeutic options based on efficacy evidence? And then are there clinical trial options as well for this patient?
Okay. So Erica, I'm coming to you, but I got one more question for Kara here on this knowledge base, and it will connect us. So what does it take to keep the knowledge base CKB up to date for labs doing interpretation in a more kind of manual or homebrew way? What would be the gains for them?
Yeah. So as you can imagine, it's a it takes a team of dedicated full-time curators. So we do have a team of curators with PhDs or MDs. And so to stay abreast of the latest and greatest, you know, we have to make sure we're adding the most recent FDA drug approvals, we're keeping up with the guidelines because those can change monthly. And then, of course, all these new investigational drugs that are coming in. And so you really need to have rigorous curation policies and processes in place, organization, and of course. And behind all of that is a fantastic team of software engineers as well that you need. So, you know, making sure the lights are on, staying on in that database, the infrastructure is up to date, all of those things. And of course, QCing all of the content that goes in there. And I'll just say CKB has over 2,000 genes and over 46,000 variants. So it's a lot, it can be a lot of maintenance, especially for those variants that are considered unknown.
Erica, so let's switch gears a bit. But let's talk about where the rubber meets the road. You have known, you know, and worked with oncologists. What's the experience of most oncologists when they receive genomic information, you know, such as these variant calls?
Yeah, super great question. And I think to sort of tackle this one, I'm actually going to kind of draw from a really great piece that was published last year by Dr. Jack West, who's another famous podcaster, and Dr. Christine Lovely. And I love the title of this. It's Ferrying Oncologists Across the Chasm of Interpreting Biomarker Testing Reports, Systematic Support Needed to Improve Care and Decrease Disparities. And yet the title, you know, the use of the word chasm here is just, it's perfect because I think it really describes how, you know, a lot of oncologists feel about bringing these advances in genomic complexity into the clinic. You know, how do we use this information? Is it actionable? You know, unfortunately, you know, this is a statistic that was cited in the paper, nearly half of, you know, medical oncologists report sort of a lack of confidence when they're trying to interpret genomic data. So just, yeah, the overall, the level of comfort and confidence in trying to interpret this really sort of varies from oncologist to oncologist, especially when you think of like community versus academic centers, urban versus rural centers, specialization, like if you're an expert in thoracic oncology versus if you're somebody who sees all patients. Obviously caseloads like play a huge role, right? If you're a busy oncologist seeing, you know, 10, 20, you know, plus patients, like when are you going to have time really to kind of interpret these types of results? And I think we all know that oncologists, you know, are not deeply, deeply trained in sort of cancer genomics. So at this point, it's not kind of feasible either to expect, you know, that tens, you know, oncologists, thousands of oncologists across the country will become sort of sufficiently trained. We need to,
it's not a miracle that happens.
right. Yeah. And I think, just kind of focus, obviously we're going to try to address barriers, you know, later on, but, you know, another big challenge I think is these reports that, you know, these genomic reports that get generated can be anywhere from like 20 to 50 pages, which is just a lot for anyone to try to get through and handle. Just the levels of evidence, which I know Carrie's going to talk about, can be very varying. And just this is the last point, you know, kind of the report nomenclature can be challenging for oncologists. Like they might be familiar with the term EGFR exon 19 deletion.
Okay.
But the report might say EGFR, you know, C.2235 dash, you know, like have the nomenclature, like,
and they're lost.
That, right? Even I have to like double take at that. But yeah, just to kind of end on like a positive note too, like we know that genomics and biomarker science have like completely transformed cancer care. So even though there are all of these sort of handicaps for oncologists, like no one denies like the value of this space and the value of, you know, ordering these types of tests. It's just that we need the tools, right? We need the solutions to kind of make things easier for them.
So now let me just turn that back to you. You've laid out the problems and this chasm. What can help them? What can make it better? What tools are there? You know, what are we doing to address that?
Right. Yeah. So let's start small and then kind of grow. And I'll definitely have, you know, Kara probably chime in on this question too. I know we'll both kind of talk about our experience on things like molecular tumor boards, but I guess just to kind of start off, like thinking about the reporting, the actual report itself of the genomic, you know, insights, oncologists definitely want, you know, kind of clear, straightforward reports that have, you know, clinical guidance on how to act, you know, if it's appropriate. I think, you know, customizable solutions and reports that cater to like a specific audience are also helpful. Like, sort of, for example, if you're a gynecologic oncologist, you know, you're going to care about like a specific subset of biomarkers, you know, more than somebody who treats kind of, you know, all patients or would want to see like pan tumor results. So like report customization to your audience, I think, is really important. And they also should be like flexible in their design. So if, you know, oncologists are really struggling with a particular area of the report and or want to see something different, you know, I think places should be able to sort of adapt their reports again or standardize the reports just so oncologists sort of have a better time, you know, digesting these types of results. But just beyond the report, we definitely need to build a better ecosystem of support when it comes to interpreting this genomic complexity. So better things, better sort of access to activities like molecular tumor boards. And I can give like a brief description of, you know, what these are.
Sure.
I'm happy to. So molecular tumor board is basically, you know, an interdisciplinary, you know, group of individuals that come together that essentially review patient cases around genomics. So they often include, you know, the oncologist that's presenting the case, molecular pathologists, pharmacists, genetic counselors. It's kind of an all hands on deck meeting where folks come to discuss the case and discuss sort of the molecular genomics and if there's anything to do at hand. And you know, again, both Kara and I have participated in these, and it really helps just kind of take the case beyond the static report. It really helps sort of aid the oncologist in making decisions, whether that be for targeted therapy, chemotherapy, clinical trials, all of those sorts of things. So definitely more access to MTBs, more resources for MTBs. And even just, you know, more access to kind of molecular experts in general, like molecular pathologists would be amazing. You know, oncologists have genetic counselors, they have radiologists to help them sort of, you know, answer questions and be supported for certain types of results. But we really sort of lack, you know, enough molecular pathologists, enough folks that are really critical in this space, just to, again, kind of aid them. So yeah, more experts in this area are definitely, you know, definitely needed to help
okay. grow the case. So clarity of reports and some expert support. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. On the ground support. Kara, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously 100% agree with everything Erica said. So yeah, we actually have opportunities to participate in, we call them genomic tumor boards or molecular tumor boards, but as the variant experts. So we present
as the variant expert on the
correct.
Board.
Yep. So we go in and present the variant, you know, what does it result? How does it change the protein? Is it, what type of variant is it? Does it result in a loss of function or is it, you know, amplification of a particular gene, things like that. So
yeah. So I'll put you on the spot a little bit here. If there was one thing you could change, if you could wave a magic wand, I'll ask both of you, Kara, you first, what would you like to see?
So laying off of this molecular tumor board, not every patient is discussed at a molecular tumor board. You know, so it really obviously depends on access to these molecular tumor boards, the type of institution, and of course, geographical setting. Is it a rural setting? You know, these community-based hospitals. For me, if I could change anything, it would be that every patient is discussed at a molecular tumor board. I mean, we want to leave no stone unturned for that patient. You know, when a patient has multiple, you know, mutations within their sample and there's different options, how does an oncologist know which one to choose first? They may not know. And so having access to these molecular tumor boards would be absolutely.
Yeah. So what's the biggest obstacle there? Is it resources and funding for small cancer oncology centers?
That's what I would, imagine. Yeah. Yes.
But they would like to, if they had all the resources, they would buy into that. Okay. And Erica, the magic wand question.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, and I will just add too to that resources question. There have been a lot of cool, there have been a lot of individuals that have stepped up. So like, I know I've seen like pharmacists and genetic counselors really try to like fill the gap, but definitely need more Caras, more variant interpretation scientists. So waving the wand, I would just like for patients to get tested in the first place, get more sort of comprehensive genomic testing in the first place. We know that biomarker testing just in general for advanced patients is very underperformed. And, most patients may only receive like, maybe information on a single gene or a hotspot, but this may not even meet sort of clinical recommendations for biomarker testing. So again, just to, I think, move this field forward and to get more actionable insights for patients and, help oncologists become more comfortable to help, patients get access to targeted therapies and clinical trials, just get them tested in the first place would be
more
great.
Testing. More testing.
More if you testing.
Could wave the wand, it would just be more testing and whatever that took, right? Which relates to some of what you've been saying.
Right.
If you got better reports, this knowledge base helps. Okay. So Erica, staying with you, technology and tools, they're out there and they're critical for helping, make complexity, easier for a lab and for labs performing their, standards of procedures for variant interpretation. How's Illumina making access to a comprehensive knowledge and streamlined workflows possible?
Yeah.
So I guess this is what we've been talking about, but it's a chance to go maybe specific and talk about what you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I can kind of start off by just talking very broadly, some of the current challenges our customers face in this sort of variant interpretation, tertiary analysis kind of reporting space. We know that our customers need sort of better solutions that allow for, flexibility and control over this kind of entire process, including, everything from the data transfer from secondary analysis pipelines to the variant interpretation piece, all the way to how the report is designed and how it's sort of laid out. So we know that our lab customers also want, key knowledge sources like JAX, at their fingertips, in a single environment so that they can have very streamlined variant interpretation, including, prioritization of clinical trials, relevant drugs, guidelines, things like that. And I think just, having control of what makes it into that final report and how that report is sort of orientated is really important and, will help sort of meet the demands of the oncologists who are, might have certain expectations about what they want to see, how they want it to look. Just quickly to touch on sort of automation features, we know that customers want, kind of more automation and essentially some customizable presets for variant interpretation to help reduce touch points. And essentially, we just, we want to help folks not have it take hours or days to sign out a report. We want it to kind of be streamlined and automated in this way and have workflows that are adjustable to, again, just speed up the time to relevant insights that's consistent and repeatable. Last kind of point too, we know that currently there are a lot of a variety of different ways for customers to sort of ingest, variant call formats or VCS files, right? Mm-hmm. Various options for them to, take on tertiary analysis. And they can do this across a lot of different assay types. So solid tumor, liquid biopsies. But options are very limited right now for whole genome sequencing and whole exome sequencing. So for Illumina, a major goal is to sort of create flexible software solutions that will work across a variety of different assays and are essentially powered for growth and expansion. So if you want to start with a certain panel and then move up to something larger, move to whole genome, whole exome sequencing, we want, you know, folks to be able to do that without increasing like headcount or resources, kind of be able to do this in one environment. So yeah, without getting, you know, too much into the product details, we're just really excited to, you know, be in this space to help customers sort of address these challenges and the gaps that we hear about. We've really been invested in the development of, you know, both secondary as well as tertiary analysis softwares. Just have a strong commitment to basically design end-to-end solutions that are better for our customers and help them, if they'd like to, stay within the Illumina ecosystem. So yeah, we're really excited, you know, to accomplish all of these things and especially to partner with groups such as JAX to deliver Connected Insights for research use, which is our software solution to address some of these barriers. So yeah.
I love how holistic Illumina's, become at this. You know, you talked the end to end and taking responsibility basically for this last mile of just ensuring that an oncologist understands it, you know. Right. And I think that's phenomenal. I've said this on the program before. We've been talking about Illumina software. So let's close up here. And I'll ask if you have any advice for labs that are just setting up a new workflow. Maybe just a couple, tidbits, hints from your perspective as they get going.
I can go first. one piece of advice I would probably give is to, you know, solicit feedback from other labs, other, you know, anybody you know working in this space. Try to find out what type of software are they using. Yeah. What type of knowledge base are they using? And the other thing I would say is, you know, when you're looking, especially for, you know, a knowledge base to support that tertiary analysis, you know, reaching out to those different types of knowledge bases, for instance, CKB, ask for a demo so you can see the type of content that you would get and how you could actually build that into your clinical pipeline. So,
okay. Yeah. Erica?
Agree. Mine's kind of along a similar lines, but yeah, solicit feedback. Talk to, like, if you're a lab or a molecular pathologist, you know, talk to your customers, if you will, talk to the oncologists, the clinicians, the researchers that are going to be the end users, right? Like, get their feedback on what they want to see for testing and what they want to see for reporting, how it will be like clinically meaningful to them. So yeah, just getting a sense of their needs to help you better design your workflows, better design your reports, kind of meet their demands. That would be, yeah, my recommendation.
Thank you both. This has really taken us inside, you know, the delivery of genetic testing, specifically in oncology. Dr. Kara Statz from the Jackson Lab and Dr. Erica Schnettler from Illumina. Thank you both.
Thank you.